Hello and welcome back to Pod Upon Parish. I'm John Fagan, CEO of Scribe and Civically, and this is episode 2. Today we are diving into the topic that is absolutely vital for the future of local councils, career pathways and apprenticeships. The question is, how do we bring fresh talent into parish, town and community councils? What does the apprenticeship route actually look like, and how do we navigate this alphabet soup of qualifications? I'm talking about the ILCA, FILCA, SILCA, the whole lot. Joining me today are two people from Dorchester Town Council who are both living the journey from two very different perspectives. First up, we have Nigel Hayes. Nigel's been with Dorchester since 2014, stepped into the RFO role in 2023. He's currently proving that the learning never stops while tackling a level 6 degree in community governance. Nigel, welcome.
Morning, John.
Good, good. And then we have Kira. Kira joined the council as finance apprentice in July 2024 and has frankly been on a bit of a tear, knocking down the ILCA, the FILCA, the PIALC and the ATT level 2 in record time. She's currently eyeing up the SILCA and her level 3. So Kira, it's great to have you here today.
Hi, John.
Hiya. So now, before we get into the technicalities of recruiting and training, Kira, I have to ask, you've completed 4 qualifications since last summer. What's going on? Do you actually sleep? I know you do a few other things. Are you just powered by caffeine and local government legislation? Do you just love it?
Yeah, I really like keeping busy. So it's just great being able to do so many things all at once. And I know it's helping my future and it's helping me be a better benefit for the council. So
What's your prioritisation technique? What are you choosing to do on a day-to-day basis? Do you segment the day?
Yeah, so all of the courses like ILCA, I only do those during the workday, so I make sure that they don't come home with me. And then I'll do like AAT study at home, so that it's like a separate thing, and then I'm not overworking myself too much in terms of my own personal life. And it helps me get like a little bit of a split in there. But power through it.
Power through it. And the caffeine, is that a feature?
Not too much. Yeah, quite good with that.
Good. And yeah, Nigel, so you've seen the council from both the finance officer and RFO seats. And looking, at the speed of Kira, she's moving. Are you worried she's going to take your job by Christmas? Come on.
It's a very good question. And it's a bit of an ongoing joke in the office that Kira's going to take my job quite quickly. And even the clerk's under threat now as well from Kira, so...
Oh, yeah, two. And then maybe other town councils in the area. They've all got to watch out.
Everyone needs to be aware of Kira and wary of her.
We haven't discussed it. So how old are you, Kira, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 19.
19. That is crazy. Already 19. So well done, Kira. How did you get into the sector? Because not normally young people are even aware of town and parish councils. And they might have heard the word, think it's got something to do with the church. How did you discover the sector and how did you get into it?
Well, I'll talk more about this later, actually. But I basically got into it purely by chance. I wanted something to do after I finished school and was just signing up to loads of apprenticeships, and this just happened to be one of them.
Okay, cool. Excellent. So if you had to look back now, like what you've achieved so far, it seems to be going so well. Is there, if you had one mistake you've made, which you related to this, what would it be? What's a common pitfall?
Oh, wow.
Putting you on the spot.
Yeah. So I suppose my mistake would potentially be doing too much. Recently I was doing another job alongside this and it got to the point where I was getting burnt out very quickly. So I think I just need to slow down a little bit. But yeah.
A lot of people can do that. So,
John, I can list some mistakes that Kira's made if you'd like to. I've got a long running document of Kira's mistakes.
Oh, yeah, good. You're waiting when the threat is there. So let's keep it a little bit lighthearted now. We're almost going to invite all the audience in. We've got about 85 signed up today, so that's really good. Nigel, to you, is there, I think you're fairly well known in the industry, but have you got a little secret you want to share that no one knows about you?
I mean, no one knows. I was a director at my local football club, Dorchester Town Football Club, for 4 years. And that came as a result of working in the council and working in council finances. So it's one of those, when you get a job in finance, you get picked up for all sorts of other finance related jobs. So that was absolutely brilliant. So that's combining my kind of passion and enjoyment for football with my professional qualifications inside.
Cool. And what's your football skills like?
Not great.
Yeah.
I enjoy playing, but at a very low level. I think I played in Southwest Dorset Division 5 or something. It's
Oh, so you were. That's
very
pretty
far,
good.
very far down
Yeah.
the pyramid.
But now, I mean, it's injury heaven now if you play
Oh,
now, isn't it?
I yeah, knees, ankles.
Good, good. Okay, yeah. So, and also, Kira, to you, is there a little secret that you want to share that no one knows about? I mean, you're quite, what I love about you do share a lot online. It's great to see you.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of engagement, particularly on LinkedIn. I don't know if you use other channels, but is there something on your side?
I mean, I suppose it's not necessarily been a secret, but I don't think I've talked about it as much. I'm actually traveling around Japan for the next 3 weeks. It'll be a
Ah,
nice little break.
sweet. That is exciting. So when you're off?
Next Sunday.
Cool. And who are you going with?
One of my friends, actually, so it's just me and her traveling around.
Awesome. So
Be
it's
fun.
winter, isn't it? Yeah. So it'll be good
Yes.
snow.
Yes.
Awesome. Oh, that is exciting.
On a
Anyway.
downside, it means I've now had to pick up all that work that I gave Kira over last year. So
But I'm
I've got a
sure
busy
you've
few
all.
weeks.
Have you not cloned Kira using AI in, you know, this, so you're good to go. Anyway, so yeah, it's time now. We're going to invite the audience in and yeah, have a good thanks a lot again for coming along to talk today and hope it all goes well.
Thanks, Ron. Okay, morning, everyone. In my notes, I've got a morning from a rainy Dorchester, but it's actually the sun's come out for the first time in a few days. So, morning from a sunny Dorchester, as you might be able to see in the window behind me, it's been sunny. So, welcome to our presentation on career pathways. I'm Nigel Hayes, and I'll be presenting today with my colleague, Kira Lake. This will be a blended presentation. So, we're going to switch between the two of us throughout for different stages of the presentation. We're aware of a mix of attendees here today. Some from world local government and some from world of finance. So as a result, some points we make may seem a bit basic to some, but new to others. So please bear with us. I'll be starting by briefly telling you a little bit about myself and what qualifies me to give this presentation. I'll then cover reasons for hiring an apprentice funding and costs, the recruitment process. At that point, I'll pass you over to Kira, who will introduce herself. She'll talk about why she chose an apprenticeship, the training she has done, and her AAT qualifications. And then Kira will pass back to me while I'll talk about going beyond Silka. I'll start by sharing a bit about my career in local government. This and my qualifications are slightly relevant to our presentation today. Dorchester's been my home for most of my life, apart from 3 years when I attended Southampton University. My career began in the private sector, working in the council department at estate agents. In 2014, I made the move into local government, joining Dorchester Town Council as a finance officer, a role that later grew into the RFO. The transition wasn't just a career change, it's quite a contrast to private sector. It really was a shift towards community-focused work that's both challenging and hugely rewarding. A lot more rewarding than working for an estate agent, I found. Since July 2025, I've also been the clerk and RFO at Bradford Peveril Parish Council, which is just outside Dorchester. I found this to be a fantastic opportunity to broaden my experience and deepen my understanding of how councils work and how they serve local communities. My professional qualification, so my own career journey, has taught me a lot about the value of practical vocational pathways. After university, where I came away with an HND in business and finance, I felt my career prospects hadn't really progressed in any way, and I realised that traditional study wasn't the only route to success. In fact, that experience of going to university is a big part of why I'm so passionate about apprenticeships as a powerful alternative to university. What I did take from those studies in the HND in business and finance was a real interest in the finance section of it. And that led me to begin my AAT qualification in 2001, and I qualified for AAT in 2004. When I, later in 2014, moved into local government, my career path broadened. It moved slightly away from finance. I started pursuing local government qualifications, gained Silka in 2017. I found Silka really deepened my understanding of council operations and governance. And the learning hasn't stopped. In February 2022, I began a community governance degree program through SLCC and De Montfort University. So it's just proof that wherever you kind of start your career, apprenticeship, AAT, or Silka, there's always a pathway forward and the learning continues. So So moving on to why Dorchester went down the apprenticeship route. If you look at the chart, there's a striking demographic gap in Dorchester among the 20 to 39-year-olds. And it isn't just a population trend. It reflects a lack of local career opportunities for young adults. So we find in Dorchester that many people leave Dorchester to university or to go to work elsewhere when they're 18 to 20, and often not returning until in their 40s to raise their own families in the town we grew up in. This challenge is recognised in Dorchester Town Council's corporate plan, which includes a clear aim to help young people afford to live and work locally. This gap was also mirrored at Dorchester Town Council when I joined in 2014. I was the second youngest office staff member, and we had no one under 30 in office roles. So that's why we identified apprenticeships as a tangible way to address these issues, not just a recruitment tool, but a long-term strategy to attract, train, and retain young talent in Dorchester. At Dorchester Town Council, we have around 30 staff, half in office roles, half in outdoor services roles based around the town. We started our apprenticeship journey in the outdoor departments, as you can see from on the bottom there. They were a natural fit. We found them quite easy to recruit for. There's quite high demand back then for those roles. And on our doorstep, we've got what was then Kingston Moorwood College, which specialises in those skills. By 2017, we recognised growing pressure on our office team and began recruiting office-based apprentices. These didn't just provide essential cover, but they brought fresh perspectives and new ideas with them. That said, it hasn't always been plain sailing. In 2020, right in the middle of COVID restrictions, our admin apprentice left and carried on his apprenticeship at Dorset Council. We advertised the position twice without success. Most applicants were coming from the other side of the county, and working from home COVID restrictions found it quite difficult to take on train an apprentice at that point. We had a 4-year gap, and at that point, I proposed a shift from an admin apprentice to a finance apprentice. The reasons being succession planning for a finance role has long been on the Dorset Town Council risk register. Years earlier, a finance officer left, walked out with no handover, and no one else really knew finances, and it left the council in a vulnerable position. So at that time, councillors were quite reluctant just to have one person doing all the finance. So a finance apprentice isn't just a nice to have, it was a practical long-term solution to a genuine organisational risk. Looking back on the history of apprentices, several of our apprentices have been offered permanent roles at the end of their apprenticeships. They become valued members of team, so no pressure on Kira. Funding apprenticeships is a lot more accessible than many think. The apprenticeship levy is paid by large employers with a wage bill over 3 million. But crucially, those levies can be transferred, meaning organisations like ours can access fully funded apprenticeship training at no direct cost. Here in Dorchester, we've benefited greatly from this. Dorset Council, who are a levy payer, have consistently supported us by transferring their levy to us, and this allows us to invest in talent without overly straining the budget. On top of that, the government offers a £1,000 incentive payment for taking on a young apprentice. It used to be £3,000 when it came out of COVID to encourage more people to take them on. So it's less than it was, but it's still a helpful boost, and it recognises the commitment to training new talent. As well as that, since 2016, Dorchester Town Council have offered grants for up to £2,000 a year to local not-for-profits to help them hire apprentices. So it's not just about filling roles, it's about growing skills across the community and actually supporting one of our key corporate goals, which was helping young people live and work locally. When thinking about getting an apprentice, it's important to look just beyond the wages. The apprenticeship hourly rate now ranges, this is from April this year, from £8 for young starters up to £12.71 for those over 21. And don't forget to factor in employer national insurance and pension contributions. And what this table shows is that apprenticeships are now a serious, sustainable talent pathway, not just cheap labour, which I think in the past it kind of was seen as. While the rates have understandably risen over the years, in 2022, the starting rate was £4.30. Today's figures reflect a real investment in someone's future with fair pay that helps retain and motivate talent. The admin apprentice I mentioned that left in 2020 was on the starting rate. He went to Dorset Council and got double his starting rate there. So it's now a lot more balanced. When you compare it to a standard entry role, okay, sorry, can I go back? There we go. when you compare it to a standard entry level role, like someone on a scale 0.4, you can see that an apprentice is quite competitively priced while gaining qualifications on the job. Importantly, these rates now make apprenticeships a genuine, attractive alternative to university. And that's something Kiel to talk about from her own experience a bit later on. So this isn't just about filling a role. It's about growing future-ready professionals who bring fresh perspectives to long-term value to your team. Recruitment of apprenticeships. I'll go on in a minute to talk about what's well for us, but every employer must start with the apprenticeship service. It's a government online platform. You register an account to advertise vacancies, manage funding, and connect with training providers. And once that's set up, you have two options. So you can manage your recruitment itself, advertising directly on the Find an Apprentice website, or with our Finance Apprentice. And the preferred route for us, I think now, is let the training provider handle it all on your behalf. That was the simplest method for us, with a college delivering the course. They take care of the whole process from advertising to applications. We're lucky in Dorset to have two colleges close by. Kingston Maud College, as previously mentioned, was ideal for horticulture apprentices, and Weymouth College have been excellent for finance apprentice role as they deliver the AAT course Kira's carrying out. Sadly, Kingston Maud College no longer offers horticultural apprenticeships. The nearest alternative is a 90-minute drive away, so that's put a stop to our outdoor program on hold for now. Kira will mention a bit more later, but these two colleges, Kingston Maud and Weymouth College, have now merged. So we're hopeful something might come out of that and they'll start offering horticultural apprenticeships again. Whichever route you take, whether you go through apprenticeship service or training provider or yourself, the decision sits with entirely with you still. For our finance apprenticeship role, we received five strong applications. I shortlisted two candidates and the interviews focused less on experience and more on character, attitude and potential. We wanted someone that was keen to learn and the right fit for the team. And I think you'll agree we found exactly that. So, with that, I'm delighted to hand you over to the successful candidate, Gera.
Hey, so who am I? I've been the finance assistant apprentice at Dorchester Town Council since July 2024, and being here has brought me so many opportunities. I began studying AAT Level 2 in September 2024 and completed this in December, just gone with 87%. At the end of March, I'll also be beginning Level 3 with Coastland College, which I'm aiming to complete by the end of 2027, if all goes well. Back in roughly October 2024, I was invited by AAT to be part of their AAT Student Council Advisory Group. This really shocked me because it's normally something you have to apply for rather than be offered. So I joined the group, and this meant I had the opportunity to have a hand in how AAT deliver their qualifications. It also meant that I was able to go to the headquarters in London back in July for an in-person day-long event, discussing the future of their qualifications and also future events. For instance, I'm not sure if any of you went to AAT's student conference Accelerate 2026, but if you did, I had a hand in deciding what the conference would be about this year. And last week, I was at their headquarters again as I was invited to the launch of their new Level 4 Diploma for Professional Accounting Technicians. Since April, I'm also the clerk of a charity called the Ashley Churchill and Fawnett Educational Trust, which means I can help them with their finances and admin, which is helping me to become more responsible and to further my own financial knowledge. And I've also just finished a temporary position at Portland Town Council, where I was their RFO whilst they covered the recruitment process for a permanent RFO. And this was from September 25 to February, well, last week actually. It means that I now have a deeper understanding of the more advanced things as an RFO does, as well as dealing with writing financial agendas and minutes for council committee meetings. But the thing I am most excited about of opportunities I've got from this is that I'm currently shortlisted for AAT Apprentice of the Year. So I'll find out whether or not I've won on the 19th of March at the AAT Training Provider Awards, which I'm really excited about. So, I mean, why did I choose local government of all things? I got into the local government sector entirely by chance. I was in my last year of A levels and knew I needed something to do once I completed my exams. and all my friends were taking gap years and going to university, but I just knew that wasn't really for me. I enjoy learning too much and I struggled to sit still for too long, honestly. I decided that an apprenticeship would be the best bet, and that because it meant I could still earn money and get qualifications at the same time, which some universities don't actually allow you to do. During my research into the university versus apprenticeship debate, I came across a table which really solidified to me why I wanted to go for an apprenticeship, because it allowed me to see the figures side by side as to how much I would be earning in an apprenticeship compared to how much debt I would be in after university, which is, I've kind of made a mock table based on the figures from April this year, which is what you can see on the slide. Whilst applying for apprenticeships in my area, I came across an advertisement for a finance assistant apprenticeship at Dorchester Town Council on Indeed, actually, and found it ideal because it was close to home, a good employer, and didn't require me to actually have any previous financial knowledge. I got called in for an interview, and I remember leaving it thinking that there was no way on earth that I got the job. I was nervous and kept repeating myself and forgetting what I wanted to say. However, the next thing I knew, I got an email from Nigel telling me that I got the job, and I couldn't believe it. I was so happy. And looking back on it, I'm so glad I went for this apprenticeship because I'm now part of a close team working to help the community, which is something I've always wanted to do. Because we're such a small team, I get to explore the different departments within the council as well. And for instance, most of our events are held throughout the summer, and we all get involved regardless of what our day-to-day job is. So, what AAT looks like for me? I've been studying AAT with Dorchester Town Council and since September 2024, so a few months after I began. And I remember feeling really anxious. I wasn't going to know anything and that everyone else would understand it so much more than me and they'd have more experience than I would. And I'm not quite sure why, but at this stage, I still held on to the stereotype that accounting was all maths and non-calculations that would bore me into oblivion, which is odd as I'd already been working as a finance assistant for 2 months by this point. And I knew, from my position at least, that it wasn't anything like that. Before I had even sat my first exam, I had been invited by AAT to join their Student Advisory Council. It honestly made me feel really good about myself and like I was being seen despite having major imposter syndrome. When they invited me to join, they told me that they'd seen my posts on LinkedIn and they liked them, which is why they wanted me. And by this point, I was posting on LinkedIn daily, Monday to Friday, to try and build up some connections and trust and to show that I was dedicated to my learning. I wanted to have a social media presence that future employers could look at and use as evidence as to why they'd want to employ me. And I suppose this worked, as not only did AAT headhunt me, but I was also approached by two companies who wanted me to join their teams as well. The exams for AAT work really nicely because for most of them, you are supposed to get your results within 24 hours. Although realistically, this was more like 30 minutes, which was much nicer, as it meant I'd be on the bus home and I'd be able to see the results before the adrenaline had died down and the doubt had kicked in. And there are a few cases this isn't like what happens, but that's for if they are partly human marked. So, for instance, the level two business environment exam requires you to wait for 4 weeks to get your results. However, any fully computer marked exam, you receive your results for rather quickly. I would say that if you are studying AAT, I highly recommend you sign up for registrations for the Student Advisory Council. Similarly, if you have any of their memberships, I believe they open up in July. I've met so many interesting people by being part of this group, and I do highly recommend it because I do believe it has helped me in terms of my career. In December, I sat my structured interview, which was part of my 3 month EPA, which is something you have to do at the end of each level of your apprenticeship, and I'll talk more about this in detail in a moment. So, as well, they also hold, AAT hold many events throughout the year, and some are invite only, whereas some are open to all students and members. So they held an event last Friday for the launch of their new level four qualification, which was invite only. However, their award events like the Training Provider Awards and AAT Connect are open to everyone, which is really, really nice. The endpoint assessment, otherwise known as an EPA, is a 3 month period at the end of your apprenticeship level where you complete the final requirements for your apprenticeship. Your employer and training provider will make a joint decision as to when they think you are ready to begin your EPA, and the assessment plan for your apprenticeship will detail how you will be assessed against the appropriate criteria set by your awarding organisation. For example, you may have to complete like prac to assessment, an interview, a project, written or multiple choice tests, or a presentation. I would say my top tips for navigating the EPA as an apprentice is to re definitely read the occupational standards and assessment plan. If you do this in the beginning, it will really help you to give an understanding of what to expect and how to prepare. Make sure you understand the knowledge, skills, and behaviour you need to learn for your apprenticeship. It will be different for all types of apprenticeships, but there are a few common ones like communication, equality, and sustainability. Definitely familiarise yourself with the EPA requirements before, during, and as you finish your learning period. Similarly to my first tip, This will really help you to prepare for what's coming and could help with calming any nerves as you won't be going into it blinded. Most importantly, make sure you stay up to date with logging your off the job hours. The last thing you want is to be coming up to the beginning of your EPA and find out that you are 100 hours off your target. Not only will this panic you, but it will make you scramble to find things to do, and you might have to postpone your EPA because of it. What I do is, whenever I have completed something I want to add, I write it down on a list with what it was and how much time it took me, so that at some point during the week I can sit down and upload the whole batch at once. Finally, ask your training provider and employer about the resit retake policy. There should be one in place for your apprenticeship qualification, and you hopefully shouldn't need it, but it could come in handy for you to know about. So, what my EPA actually looked like with me doing AAT. For me to begin, I had to have at least 278 hours of off the job and be with the college for 365 days. Luckily, thanks to all of the opportunities I was given, I was able to smash that with just under 320 hours. And once I was in the EPA period, I was given an interview date for my 1 hour structured interview. During the interview, I had to answer at least six questions relating both the course to my work. These were on a variety of things like sustainability, diversity, quality, communication, and many more. This differs depending on the apprenticeship, but for AAT level two, my training provider could not actually book my final exam until I had completed the interview, regardless of whether I passed it or not. So once I'd completed the interview, I was able to get the exam booked for a few weeks later. I think the hardest thing for me was the results waiting time. I had to wait 4 weeks for both my interview and exam results because it was the business environment exam. But by that point, the difficult part of actually doing it was over. So my only worry was whether I had passed or not. But besides the waiting time, the EPA process with AAT was very simple and easy to follow, which meant I wasn't really worried about it until I had started doing it, which was good because it meant I could focus on my studying and work that I had to complete prior to the EPA beginning. So I love learning. I enjoy keeping my brain active by challenging myself with new things. So I really appreciate how much there is to do within the council. As I said, I started studying AAT level two in September 2024, a few months after I began in the July, which meant I was going to college 1 day a week. However, I was also able to study towards several SLCC courses at the same time as they help you become more efficient for council. So I completed ILCA and FILCA first, and then had a few months break before completing PEALC in mid-2025. And I've recently began studying CILCA after they finished remodeling the course. I really like that the council allows me to gain these qualifications that will help me find a job in the sector after my apprenticeship is finished, provided I don't get to stay on here, of course. I also love a good webinar. I have kept a list of all the CPD I have completed since I joined to build a habit of it, so that whenever I may need to submit CPD for a license, I don't have to create a habit of remembering what I've done. In 2024, I was actually able to get 60 CPD points and 78.5 in 2025. Honestly, I think out of all the webinars I've attended, most of them were Scribe webinars, either for training on how to use Scribe or as part of their series of webinars like this one. And with that, I will give you back to Nigel, who will go more about Silka and beyond.
Thank you, Kira. So, like Kira, I generally enjoy learning. I believe it should never stop, whatever stage of your career you're at. And that's why I'm a strong advocate for ILCA, the Introduction to Local Council Administration. I'd like every new member of staff at Dorchester to complete it. And we've even put our brilliant youth councillors through it, a couple of them anyway. It's such an effective way to understand what council does, why it exists, and how your role fits into the bigger picture. And with ILCA, it's a bit easier to do alongside the actual job rather than some of the others. When we began recruiting for a finance apprentice, I took the opportunity to build on that foundation. I wanted them to complete FILCA for Financial Introduction to Local Council Administration, and then the SLCC internal auditing qualification, which John mentioned earlier. I think it's called PIAL, I think it's pronounced, which I also recently completed as well. SILCA takes these to another level. As some mentioned at the start, it's far from an easy qualification, especially when you're working as a in a council role, and it does still remain a cornerstone of qualification for clerks. But for those who want to go further, particularly if you're a clerk in a larger council, the community governance degree delivered by SLCC and De Montfort University is a natural step. In late 2021, I attended the introductory event. I'd strongly recommend this to anyone who's considering it and has completed SILCA. The introductory event, there's no commitment at that stage. You meet some of the tutor team. Interestingly, when Lionel mentioned earlier, he was tutored on Silka by Elizabeth Skinner. Elizabeth's still a tutor on the community governance course, and she's still tutoring with Silka as well, which is quite impressive. So anyone doing Silka, you can save IR, big her up a bit. There's no, you get to hear from current students on the introductory course and get a feel for whether the course is right for you. It's a low pressure way to make a explore a big decision. Finally, on the right hand side of this your slide, you'll see the logo for a master's in public leadership, which follows on from a community to governance degree and is growing in popularity. So whether you're just starting out in Ilka, working towards Silka, or considering a degree, there's a clear supported pathway. I'll briefly touch on the community governance degree program. It's structured across 3 levels. As shown, each level takes 2 years. The key bit for this course is its flexibility. At the end of each level, you can choose to carry on or stop and leave without qualification. There's no pressure to commit for the full 6 years from day one, although I found the learning is completely addictive. Level four follows on really naturally from Silka. It covers similar grounds such as law, finance, planning, governance, but goes into greater depth. If you're a clerk at a larger council or aspiring to be, I'd definitely recommend looking at level four. The shift on level five slightly switches. It's less about technical knowledge and more about growing you as a leader, not just a manager. And at level six, which I've just started now, along with a couple of other people in this webinar, I know are still doing the same this course as me, accumulates in a dissertation, which is your chance to explore a topic you're generally passionate about and contribute something original into the sector. The course is credible, flexible, and increasingly popular route for career and personal development in local government. So just to wrap things up, the key takeaways for me, firstly, apprenticeships aren't just a recruitment tool. They are a strategic investment in your workforce, your succession planning, and your organization's future. Secondly, the funding is more accessible than you may realize, whether it's levy transfers, government incentives, or local grant schemes. There is support out there. Thirdly, the qualifications landscape is clearer and more flexible than ever. There's a clear pathway, and the online qualifications have made this even clearer. And finally, for me, the apprenticeships aren't just about filling vacancies. They're about people, their potential, their passion, and their willingness to learn. And that's what's made Kira successful, and that's what will make your apprentices successful too. And thank you for listening, everyone.
Excellent. That was a really good event. Thank you so much, Kieran and Nigel. We had a lot of really good questions there, and really good audience participation. I'm going to go to you, Kira. If someone only remembers one thing from this episode that you shared today, what would you like that to be?
I would say my top tips for EPA. Whenever I speak to any apprentices, they say the EPA is the thing which they are most worried about in the entire thing.
Yeah, good, good, good. I'm sure they will take that away. I mean, what's going to do? We're going to ask you to write a guest blog. This is also the life advice question. If you could go back to your 18-year-old self and give yourself one bit of advice. Obviously, I can't ask you, Kira, because that was only a year ago. This is going to go to you, Nigel. I'm sure you're. I don't know how old you are, but you do
Yeah.
look.
Careful, John.
Firstly, what were you doing when you were 18?
18, I was at
I want a picture of
univers
it. What's the vision?
I was at university, which you'll find out later, kind of a little bit wasting my time.
Are you kind of wasting your time? Okay, so what advice would you give yourself?
For an 18-year-old, I'd say get out of your comfort zone. Don't always take the easy route. You'll learn a lot better from being outside your comfort zone. Do something that challenges you and makes you feel awkward, and you'll learn a lot more.
And well, yeah, I mean, it's top advice. It probably would have been similar to me as well. Given my 18-year-old self. So, have you got examples of where you've done that in your life? What you're most proud of?
I think public speaking, I never would have done something like this even 6 years ago, I don't think. Public speaking growing up completely daunted me, and it's not till I was kind of not forced to do it, but I started doing it more often. But I realized that you do get used to it and you get better at it and you enjoy it more.
Yes, 100%. That is a great one. I mean, that is a great fear of people public speaking. I had the same one also when I was in my 30s. I thought I'm going to have to do more. I can see how it's going, and I'm going to be as your career progresses, I'm going to do more public speaking. So I just put myself out of my comfort zone as well. I did one of those public speaking courses. Went along to that, and that worked really well. Still never comfortable, but generally, I always think if you're prepared, if you're happy with your presentation you're doing and all that kind of stuff, it makes you more comfortable doing it.
I'm amazed you're no longer in your 30s, John. How's that a past tense?
That's good. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was, I actually did that in Australia. I was living in Perth at the
Wow.
time. But everyone in the audience is, in that group were in the same position, you know, and you felt so much, you didn't matter, worry if you look silly. And there's a lot of people, you know, wedding, you know, best man speeches and all that kind of stuff, preparation. We have this tradition now where the previous guest leaves a question for the next guest, and then and so on. So Mark Tompkins from Aubergine left a question. If you are brutally truthful for yourself, what one thing do you know you don't do particularly well that you could get better at? So who wants to take that?
I don't mind taking that.
Cool, Kira.
So I would say internalized confidence is a major thing for me. Even doing this, I have massive imposter syndrome right now. Like when I've mentioned my confidence to people before, they tend to be shocked because they think I'm quite good at like masking my nerves and appearing confident. But in reality, I tend to feel like really out of place, and like there are other people who are so much more deserving of the opportunities I've given than I am.
Yes, fake it before you make it. It's the
Manifestation.
one. Fake it before. Okay, and who's going to leave a question for the next guest? Who wants to take that?
I'm happy to,
So what are you going to leave for that
I've
one?
got two and I couldn't decide between two. Ooh, I'm going to go, who or what has been the biggest influence on your career and why?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. That's a good one. Awesome. Okay, well, thanks again. It's been a great event, and yeah, have a good rest of your day. Cheers.
Thank you,
Thank
everyone.
you.